the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
A regulator strangling crypto in the crib. There's a ton of backlash against the proposed new exchange control rules for South Africa, going by the name of Draft Capital Flow Management Regulations. Kind of quite a tongue twister. Some of the proposals are frightening. Law enforcement officers would be given the power to search electronic devices and demand you hand over passwords or even seed phrases that are in your head. Another criticism of these proposed new rules is that domestic transactions will be treated the same as cross-border flows from a reporting point of view. That adds paperwork, costs, and friction to the whole process. The thresholds for reporting are vague. The penalties are severe, with fines of up to 1 million rand and prison terms, believe it or not, of 5 years for non-compliance. So, I ask the question again, are we throttling crypto before it has even started to walk? To discuss this, we are joined now by Frank Leonetti, CEO of crypto exchange Afridax. Hi, Frank. It's good to talk to you again. Let's focus on some of these proposed new exchange control rules. Now, they come hot on the heels of the travel rule, which was brought in last year, if my memory serves me correct. And that is where you're required, or crypto exchanges are required, to verify both the sender and receiver of crypto transactions and report these to the Financial Intelligence Center. This surely raises the barrier for entry to the crypto market, does it not? Now we've got the travel rule and we've got these new, very, very onerous exchange control rules. So maybe just take us through what is involved here.
Thank you, Kieran. Thank you for having me on your podcast. First of all, the travel rule was introduced in November 2024, and the FIC gave us 5 months to implement the travel rule, which was insane. Generally, that type of regulation, you're looking at 18 months to get it right and to do it correctly. But the industry got together, and the industry actually pulled it through and implemented the travel rule. And, the regulations around the travel rule are quite invasive because, as you mentioned, you have to transmit that information to the destination intermediaries as well. So you lose privacy in the travel rule. And these are the concerns that were raised initially. But I think the regulators decided that the travel rule needed to be implemented. We were facing greylisting problems. And the country needed to get over some hurdles, and those regulations needed to just be implemented as quickly as possible. So straight on to the back of that, we're now seeing these draft Reserve Bank propositions here. And, you know, I've never seen such a pushback in the crypto industry as I've seen with regards to these. There's definitely an invasion of privacy again. People having to declare their assets, having to ask for permission, no clear thresholds, as you mentioned. And those are all creating confusion in the market. And, you know, the interesting thing will be to see if the actual regulators or the Reserve Bank is actually going to listen to the industry and not just hammer this process through. And I think they're inundated at the moment with massive amounts of information that's coming their way and why they shouldn't do it. But it'll be an interesting field to see how it plays out. But to your point with barriers to entry, absolutely. Afridax is probably one of the last homegrown exchanges to have entered the market. And we were born into the regulation environment. We never had the advantage of trading for a couple of years without the regulations. We had to be regulated from day one. But having said that, we don't see many players coming into the market, entering into that space. And regulation absolutely creates a moat in and around your business. And I think that's an advantage to some degree.
Right. Going back to these exchange control rules, do you think this is going to stifle innovation? You've already mentioned this aspect of the moat, the fact that you've got to be so heavily regulated, it's going to raise barriers to entry. So you kind of grandfathered into this crypto market if you've come in at this time. But new entrants will probably think, I'll dedicate my efforts somewhere else, maybe in the financial markets, maybe somewhere else. But in the crypto market, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I mean, innovation is definitely going to be stifled. When you create products in this space, you're going to have to pass them through some form of sanity checks that are compliant through your frameworks, your risk frameworks. And you've got to make sure that they're able to function in the market in a regulatory compliant way. So when you look at regulation, we would easily say that your cost of company is between 60 to 70%, depending on the type of business that you operate and how small your business is, if you can afford those costs. So what we do see happen is that most of our innovation, most of our products that we introduce are going to be stifled, and we're going to be slowed up in the market. We're not going to be able to introduce these products as quickly as we would like them to be introduced. But we see this playing out. People are taking their time. Products that are available in decentralized networks that have no regulatory frameworks around them are flying and doing exceptionally well. So, yeah, it definitely stifling innovation.
Right. I mean, we mentioned that there's a backlash, and you say it's probably the most severe backlash that we've ever seen against any proposed regulation introduced in South Africa, certainly in the financial markets. Do you think the regulators are getting the message that you cannot go this far? This is too much. And if they do, what will be the likely consequences of that? I mean, one could imagine that you're going to see a gray market. Talk about the gray list. You're going to see a gray market or a black market developing for crypto, where people are just not going to declare what they own.
Yeah. So, you know, just my personal history in terms of when regulations started to enter into the crypto market over the years, many of the recommendations that were made were pretty much ignored. So we're probably going to have something very similar, where the Reserve Bank is going to stick to its guns and it's going to hammer it through. And I think with regulation, if you don't get the balance right, you're going to have people just ignore it. Just look at the toll roads, for example. You're supposed to pay them. Everybody has to pay the toll roads, but nobody does because they've just gone too far. And I think that's at that particular point in time, you're going to see people or the public going to resist against that, and they're not going to abide by the laws, regardless of the penalties. They just feel that it's just too far.
What then about the South African revenue services from a tax point of view? Because they would want to see some alignment there. I mean, they want to get their cuts, you know, every time you're transacting. And if people are going off grid and not disclosing what they own, I think SARS is going to have less visibility into this market. Is that going to be a problem?
Well, that is definitely one of the problems that you would have when you overregulate, is people go gray and they don't expose those transactions to the regulators. Having said that, I mean, SARS has got its own reporting requirements coming into the financial platforms. The COF reporting is going to be plugged into every financial platform, where SARS has direct insight into every transaction that you do. So whether you deposit funds, whether you trade, whether you make a profit, SARS will know about it. It will be a live feed into their systems, and they would definitely be inspecting those transactions to see where their cut lies. But having all of this regulation over and above is going to cause people to reconsider how they're going to operate on these platforms, because in the past, we've seen volumes on exchanges drop. Over the last 5 years, it's probably about 90%. And part of that is because of the regulations that are coming in. People are no longer feeling that they need to expose that capital that they have on these platforms in light of just being pinged by regulators.
Do you think it's likely to drive people to decentralized exchanges where reporting requirements are not they are not obligated, if that's the correct word, where maybe you can hide your transactions a little bit better?
Well, absolutely. A decentralized exchange, there is absolutely no regulatory oversight there. You can definitely hide your transactions. There's so much technology out in the crypto sphere that allows you to swap your crypto for different types of crypto, bridge your crypto, if you will, move it around in that decentralized space. That's going to just obscure the entire transaction from the regulators. And I think it's becoming very popular. Decentralized exchanges have doubled, more than doubled in their volumes. So what we've seen is a reduction in centralized exchange volumes, now an increase in decentralized volumes. So that shows you that the market will shift until such a time as they can regulate decentralized markets.
Right, and also these privacy coins like Zcash and Monero also become extremely popular, right?
Exactly, and I think Zcash is doing pretty well at the moment.
Okay, now let's talk about Afridex. Afridex, your company, it's one of the newer exchanges, maybe the newest in South Africa. How are you as a small, fairly startup operation able to absorb these new obligations that have been imposed on you?
Karen, we've actually been very fortunate. 2 years before we launched a regulatory company that specializes in FIC compliance called GloRep. And that product is doing exceptionally well. It's a world-class product. And Afridax is able to leverage some of GloRep's services, a lot of GloRep services, and get subsidized. And so we are fortunate enough to be able to absorb some of these costs, not all the costs, but a large part of them are subsidized through our GloRep sister company. And that company has its own revenue streams, doing very well. So we piggyback quite nicely off it. Now, having said that, Afridax is growing steadily. We see growth in our platform. Customers are signing up. Deposits are coming in. We still maintain that we're one of the most cost-effective platforms in the industry at the moment. And we're experiencing a lot of customer growth. And that's also helping us.
Good. And the customers that are coming to you, are they, the crypto enthusiasts who like to spread their wealth around a little bit, or they like to arbitrage between exchanges? What kind of people are coming to you?
We're actually seeing a lot of customers depositing fiat and exiting in crypto. And that seems to be most of what the trade is about. We just need crypto, and that would result in some form of arbitrage or some form of personal acquisition. So, a lot of fiat in, a lot of crypto out.
All right, let's go back to the regulations that we have now in South Africa, these proposed regulations. I had a look at it, and we are out of line with what is happening overseas to quite a large extent. Do you anticipate that we'll see even more regulations? Because I don't think this is the end of the road. We have travel rule, we have exchange controls, new exchange controls, and I think more is coming. And South Africa is trying to demonstrate, to the teacher at the head of the class, being the Financial Action Task Force, that we are very worthy of being taken off the grey list, and we want to stay off that grey list. So they will do whatever they have to remain off that list.
No, absolutely. And South Africa is a member of the FATF, and I think the FATF has approximately 60 countries that are part of its membership, and they are responsible for handing down a lot of the regulations. So you see a lot of alignment with international countries that are part of this membership. And South Africa is no exception. We've adopted a lot of the FATF regulations. But I think in the draft, the Reserve Bank draft proposal, we're a little bit ahead. And I think the FATF member countries are watching South Africa closely to see how this plays out. And if they get away with it, and probably see that being adopted in other territories as well.
Yeah, I think where we are not aligned with what's happening overseas is in the area of self-custody, because the Europeans and the Americans looked at this and they said, no, you cannot go for overreach to that extent where you prevent people from self-custodying their own assets. Where we've done that, where a border control agent, as you come into South Africa, do you own any crypto? What is your password? Or if you don't have a password, what is your seed phrase? That's the 12 words that you maybe have memorized in your head as your password. Now, the dangers that would expose you to if you've got to hand that over, what do you know about that person that you're handing it over to? And even if it's recorded on a database somewhere, how safe is that from a hack?
Well, these are some of the questions that the crypto industry has pushed back to the regulators and said, you don't really understand this industry. You don't understand the privacy. You don't understand the risks involved. And yet you've just come out and you've drafted up some form of regulation and wanting us all to comply to this regulation and not really understanding what the risks are and what the implications are. So I think, if anything, the regulators do need to listen to the community. They do need to listen to the exchanges. They need to understand what the risks are and how this is actually going to play out. And without that understanding, there's no ways that they can implement such a regulation. A self-custody is the right. And the moment that you can't have that, you've lost privacy again. And the moment that you reveal your, let's say you've got a wallet that's got 10 Bitcoins in, you immediately become a target for a wrench attack. some form of kidnapping or ransomware. So those are the things that need to be discussed. Those are the things that, that regulators need to understand what the risks are. And I don't think that has been tabled yet. So we need engagement with the regulators before anything can be passed.
Right. So you're involved in helping companies ensure that they're compliant with the laws through GloRep, which is your sister company that you've been talking about. What is the feedback that you're getting from the companies that you're engaging with about these regulations? And give us some idea, you know, what is it costing a company in terms of, you know, percentage of turnover or profit in order to remain compliant?
I think the cost of compliance is, you cannot put a price on it because it pulls your entire business into the compliance framework. You know, everything from your C-suite right down to your staff members, your development departments, all have to be involved in some way. And those costs cannot be calculated. We've estimated them to be 60, 70% of your company's expenses. And that's what,
sorry,
that's what
did
we
you say? Did you say 60 to 70%?
Absolutely. It can
the
easily
cost of
be that. Yeah. Depending on the type of business and depending on the products that you sell and how risky those products are, just for Afridac's sake, we've got our entire business is involved in compliance in some way or another. So that's our staff. We have compliance people. Our development department has to develop in a compliant way. They have to be involved. They have to understand the regulations. You're hiring staff to handle compliance operators. So then you still need a platform to process your compliance at scale. And what we're seeing in some of the industries that we consult in is that they're unaware of what's actually involved. And they don't understand how this implicates their business from a compliance perspective or even from a cost perspective. So we often go into companies and we realize that they don't really know the full extent of what the FICA compliance requirements are. And after educating them, they realize, well, we need to actually, you know, take this seriously, and we need to gather a team together to implement these solutions and to implement these compliance frameworks, if you will. So it's untold, you know, the toll that it puts on a business. It's immense.
And what kind of companies are we talking about here? Are these crypto companies, CASP licensed companies, or are they in financial services in other areas? What are they?
Well, every FSP has to be compliant with the FIC as well as the FSCA. That includes banks, crypto platforms. You've got real estate agents now having to be compliant. You are motor vehicle companies need to be compliant. And then where the net gets you know, quite far and wide is when you deal with high-value goods dealers. Now, that can be engineering firms, that can be people who deal with watches, do anything that has value, farming equipment, gold dealers, and so on. And I think when you start to realize how big that net is, it's practically most big businesses in South Africa have to form some form of compliance.
Wow. That's a staggering number, I got to say. I didn't think it was that high, just for the compliance. But from what you're saying, everybody involved from the C-suite, from the chief executive all the way down is somehow involved in having to put in time and employ people in order to make sure that they're compliant.
Absolutely. Everybody's got to get involved. And I think if you are going to develop any product, it has to be done through the lens of the compliance framework. It has to be sanitized through your risk processes, has to be sanitized through your compliance processes, to the point where your products have to be risk rated. So if you're selling turbines, you need to understand that that could have a dual use, and those turbines could be used in the manufacture of nuclear weapons, for example. So now you have to risk rate your products. So the entire compliance cycle is immense.
Wow. Okay. Final question, Frank. All these new rules coming in at a time when crypto volumes on local exchanges are way down, and the stable coins, of course, have taken over as the big trading volume on the exchanges. I would assume that these added costs that we've been talking about, they're easier to carry in a bull market, which we don't have at the moment. We're in the midst of a bear market. So when the bull market returns, which I'm sure many people will hope is going to be quite soon, will this become a little bit of an easier burden for exchanges like Afridac's?
Well, first of all, I think stable coins are going to be regulated. The issuance of stable coins, definitely. That's the next regulation to probably happen. And then shortly after that, stable coins will be integrated into the national payments system regulations as well. So we're not going to stop at what the current regulations are. I think there's more to come. And, you know, from a absorbing cost perspective, I don't think exchanges can rely on trading fees and exit fees anymore. They're going to have to be a little bit more innovative and provide products that are going to make other revenue streams. Those trading fees, I'm not sure if they're ever going to come back, specifically with this type of regulation that we see.
Very sobering. Frank Leonetti, CEO of AfriDAX. We're going to leave it there. Thanks for your time, Frank.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.